Hello and welcome to Kat the Baker. I'm Chef KB. Have you ever had those days where you just feel sexy? I don't have them too much because I'm working a lot. In my previous episodes, when I was in San Diego, I thought I was working a lot. But now I'm really working a lot, even more than I thought I would. But I have to do what I have to do until everything kind of sinks in, right? Like right now, I'm just saying yes to everything. And then I'm seeing, okay, what is going to stick? What is not? And what other opportunities come my way? It's hard for me to record because Monday through Wednesday, I literally work all day. I wake up at 4:30. I have to be at work by 6 a.m. I end that job around 2. And then I leave at 3:30 for my other job, which starts at 4:30. And then that goes till 9. So from 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., it's really just work. And that is 3 days a week. And then I only have one day off where I don't have either job. I kind of planned it that way, that I can have one day. And that one day is amazing. I'm grateful to just have one day where I'm working only one job and not two at the same time. But I'm really grateful that I'm able to make money and I don't need help from my ex. I can do it. You know, it took a lot of planning, but I figured it out. That's really what's been going on. I started teaching. I work at a community college. I am a pastry chef, but I'm working a culinary class, which I can do. And when I need to do something, I will do it. You know, my willpower is pretty strong when you need to make ends meet. But also, in pastry, I can talk about any topic for hours. You know, I've learned a lot. I've worked a lot in this field. And I know what to do and how to do it. And when things go wrong, how to fix it. You know, just I can talk all day. With culinary, it's a little bit different. I don't know the proper technique names. You know, I know how to do things, but am I skilled enough to be teaching these students this way? You know, and that's my concern. At the same time, it's been 2 weeks teaching. I enjoy teaching, and ultimately, I think if you enjoy the topic, like I enjoy cooking, I don't enjoy cutting apart the meat or taking apart a whole chicken. Like, these are not things I enjoy. This is the reason why I didn't go into culinary. I went into pastry, and at the time I was a vegetarian, so I really wasn't going to go into culinary. But I cook at home, you know, but it's different when you've got 18 students watching you cut something apart versus you doing it yourself. You know, you're showing these students how to do it, and this is the right way, versus you doing it at home thinking, oh, I hope this works out, you know? So that's kind of what's been happening a little bit. I've been having to plan more and know what I'm doing more the next day, which has been tricky because when I get home, it'll be 9:30. And then I have to figure out, okay, what am I doing the next day? Because as soon as the next day starts, I don't have time to look up what I'm doing the next day. So today is my day off, my one day off. It's just nice. It's nice to just lay in bed and not have to get up right away. So I did that. But I did something pretty exciting today, and I don't know where it's going to go, but I have a positive feeling, and I think that means a lot, because I try and listen to my feelings and my gut instincts, and I didn't plan it, you know, and it's usually the things that you don't plan that kind of work out the best, you know, and again, this is just a possibility. But I'm the type of person that if something comes my way, I don't say no. You know, I look at it and be like, okay, how can I do this and I'll attempt it and I'll start it. And if there is a possibility, then I will figure it out and start it in my life. And if not, and if it feels bad when I'm doing it, then I let it go. A friend of mine that I went to acting school with 25 years ago, she lives in LA, and she contacted me. She started a restaurant group with her husband, and they've been offered 3 times this beautiful location downtown. It's a huge restaurant. Apparently, a year ago, a celebrity chef was working in it. There's an investor group, and they want my friend and her husband to take it over. They want them to start a restaurant in there, you know, and they have one other location of something else. So they asked me to come with them and look at the kitchen, you know, look at the equipment, look at how the kitchen is. So I said, okay, I'll come with you. You walk in. First of all, it's downtown LA. It's right next to the Broad, which is a really beautiful museum, very modern. And then kind of toward the back of the Broad, there is this restaurant. And it's covered by olive trees, which are, I don't know, 300 years old, like very old. And they're beautiful. But because of these olive trees, you can't really see the restaurant. It's set toward the back. There's a small like park and it's set toward the back. You really have to know where you're going as a guest, you know, and know that it's back there or advertise in certain ways. Because even the building itself was built by a famous Italian architect and it's very rustic. It blends in with the trees, you know, it's very browns and grays, so not super bright that you can notice it in the back. So I go in. And beautiful tall ceilings. There's a lot of modern touches, a lot of metal, a lot of wood, just very rustic and earthy. But you walk in, you have this really high ceiling, and there's the bar right there, a quite large bar, large counters, and then seating off to the left. And then to the right, there's more seating. And then they have this open kitchen, right? That's all the rage, right? Everybody wants an open kitchen, which as a cook, you know, we don't really want. But anyway, there's an open kitchen. There's a brick oven. There's meat preparation. There's a small line, right? So it's more of the show place. And then you have the back of the kitchen where the dish is. There's a small place for a garde-manger or pastry, where they prepare the dishes or the desserts. And there's also a dumb waiter, which there's a second floor. So you get the plated items possibly from the top to the bottom or certain ingredients from the top to the bottom and then you plate it below. So going up to the second floor, there's a whole event space, a type of balcony, like an outdoor. You could have, you know, wedding reception. I mean, it's quite large, but also for intimate settings too. And you have this downtown view. And then there's the upstairs, which is in between the stairs, there's a large walk-in, which is kind of bad, you know, because you have to go up the stairs with these heavy deliveries, heavy orders. And then you go further up the stairs and there's a prep kitchen. It's not huge, but it's a good space. There's like 4 small walk-ins. There's a large counter in the middle. There's an oven, like 2 small combi ovens, like a 3-compartment sink. You have a mixer. You know, it's good for, I guess, the menu for what they were doing. And then you have the office upstairs for all the paperwork and stuff. And then they left all of their equipment. You know, you've got all these Cambros and, like I said, mixers. They have tools there. They have Roboku. They have blenders. Like, they left it all. So they want my friend to take it over. You know, they're quite excited, but also overwhelmed because just the overhead for this, like just utilities, is maybe 20, 30 plus thousand a month. So it's quite a large thing, you know, but they're seriously considering it because the investors are not giving up on them, you know? So my friend is like, well, they're going to need more investors as well. And they want me to be in on it, which that itself is exciting, you know? And when I walked in, there were these investment groups and they introduced me. My friend was telling them of where I've worked and what I've done. And then the investor said, oh yeah, I've heard of you. I don't think he's being serious. I don't think that's true. He's probably confusing me, or he's just saying he has, you know, so that's that. But it was very nice of him to say. I'm like downplaying, but yeah, I haven't been in the papers in a while, you know, and that was just in Arizona. So I think he's probably mixing me up. But the fact that they thought of me and they want me on board is pretty cool, you know. At the same time, I work at this cafe, which there's more drama unfolding. Like, ugh, every place has its drama. But it turns out that the executive chef at this cafe, you know, when I had all these issues, right, with executive chefs and sous chefs, I didn't want that here. So when I staged the executive chef, I was like, oh, like he's very amiable. You know, he's not the yelling type. He'll be fine. You know, so I was looking for not the yelling type. But now he's not doing anything. Like he's not yelling. He's not really saying what's going on. If I try and instill something like a routine, he won't necessarily back me up. He won't not back me up, but it's all me. You know what I mean? So it's bad when you have someone who's too quiet. And it's bad when there's more than one pastry chef, because it's hard for me to kind of step up in a way, because then I feel like I'm overstepping, right? Like this chef has been there for, I don't know, 8 years. And then here I come in and now I'm power tripping. Like, is that what's going on? Like it's hard for me to start things, you know, when they've never been, or if the pastry chef doesn't back me up. Like I'm a pastry chef too. We're supposed to be on the same level, but I don't think that works out. I don't think that's necessarily positive in this environment. So yeah, I don't think this is a long-term thing. It's good for now because I'm getting two paychecks, right? Like one from here and one from teaching. But I'm learning a lot just with, okay, what is the best personality for a chef? I have to get along with the chef, but he also has to delegate. Like he's not doing any of it. He's basically looking to me to delegate everything, to order everything. Like I'm the pastry chef and he's working on things like his own projects, but I'm the one who has to help the staff, who has to step in and make the stuff. Like he just gets to do his own thing, which, okay, that's cool, right? Because he's figuring out the pies for Thanksgiving or the cake that he had to do for Halloween. You know, even though he didn't take my advice, he made a skull cake, which is kind of like a bundt cake, but in a skull form. And it stuck into the pan. And I said, well, I make these all the time. You have to use actual butter, right? Like not melted, like soft. You have to apply it with your hands and then dust it lightly with some flour. He just pan sprayed it and put it in. And when he did it, it didn't stick. So he did it again and then it all stayed stuck. And I was just like, oh, okay. Like, you know, I mean, he's not taking my advice. And then he works on these projects and then they fail. So because of this, the person that works in the office, right, he's the budget guy. So he does all the schedules. The chef doesn't make the schedule. The office manager makes the schedule for the whole restaurant. Because it's a control thing, that way he knows nobody's going to go in overtime, which is kind of weird, right? Because the manager in the office doesn't know what the kitchen needs. But it's so controlling that he says, you only have this time. It has to be done in this time. No ifs, ands, or buts, you know, which is kind of weird. I've never worked in a restaurant setting like that, because that's why you have a chef. That's why you have these positions in the kitchen because they know what's going on. They know how much time everything takes and how much time you need. But this guy, the office manager, doesn't care. If he says something and he wants something, that's what he wants and it will be done. You know, so because the chef wasn't coming out with these cakes that he wanted, he gave a project. It was a cheesecake tart. He gave that tart to the CDP, the chef de partie. And he does a really good job. He gives these side projects to the CDP or to the chef. Meanwhile, we still have all this production to do, right? So we're always short people. The chef was upset that the manager gave it to the CDP because he wasn't getting his tasks done. So he's like, well, that kind of made me look bad. And I'm thinking, okay, like now this is a power struggle. So in the end, it means more work for me because I have to straighten everything else out. And he's just trying to make himself look better. So yeah, it's another example of a chef, like what not to be. So there has to be a medium, right? You have to still give direction, but still be a calm personality. Like, is that possible? Is it possible to be a calm personality, but yet still be clear in direction? I mean, I think I am. Like, I like to think of myself that I am. But then when I'm thrown into these situations, it makes me not calm. Like, it makes me wonder what is going on here. And having two chefs is so weird. So that's what's going on there. And then a couple weeks ago, I started teaching, but a few days before that, right, I started teaching on a Monday. But on the Friday, on my day off, I decided to go by the school because I didn't have a lesson plan. I didn't know anything. So nobody told me to go by there. So I decided, well, I need to be organized. So I'm going to go by there. And I met the office person, you know, and I said, what is it that I need? Uniform wise, lesson plan wise. They didn't give me anything. And it was then that I saw the executive chef and he gave me a textbook, right? Which he said I had to get myself. But I said I didn't even know which textbook. Then he said I have to get a jacket embroidered. So that takes at least 1 to 2 weeks. Meanwhile, I start teaching in 3 days. He said there was no lesson plan and I'm teaching a culinary 101 class, but because it's in the evening, they have to prep for the cafeteria class for breakfast as well. And basically whatever the chef needs, they have to get it done along with the curriculum and the lesson I'm giving. So it's a 4-hour class. It's not very long, so it goes by quickly. So certain things are very tricky, like making stocks or braising certain things. You know, it's challenging because of the time factor. It's hard to get that support, you know, because let's say I make a beef stock. Well, you have to leave it in the stock pot overnight and there's nobody that's going to take it out the next day. I didn't have a lesson plan, so I had to create that. And I've never taught this class before. I've never even taught at the school before. So I'm like, what is going on here? And that was the craziest thing. So I had to create week by week what they're going to do. And I based it because it's a cafeteria class. I'm like, okay, I'll base it on a cafeteria style menu. But that wasn't right either. I have to base it on a classic menu because it's more review. So they have to learn more mother sauces, you know, and what sauces come from those mother sauces. And stocks again. Like, we have to review everything. We have to do knife skills. So I've never taught culinary before. And here this chef is just throwing me into it all. It was so frustrating, but I'm like, I have to make it work because I get paid well. You know, this has to work out. So that's what's been going on. I created a week by week plan. And the first week was dressings and salads, which I thought, okay, that's like a good way to ease in, right? So we tasted homemade dressings that we made. Like, we made a fresh ranch, we made a fresh Caesar, a fresh Thousand Island, a fresh Niçoise, which is made with a whole grain mustard. We made a fresh balsamic vinaigrette. I went around the class asking what is their favorite dressing. And then we tasted the homemade versus bought ones in the cafeteria. And I thought it was very interesting. And the dressings were delicious. Like, homemade dressings are delicious. They're a good amount of work because you got to chop all this stuff. You know, same with Caesar dressing. Like, you've got your Parmesan, you've got a little bit of anchovy. It takes a while to prepare all these things. You know, that's why you buy them bought, because nobody thinks about the preparation on this stuff. But homemade tastes so much better. So then the second week, we did soups, right? So they'd already made stocks in the 060 class, the previous class to this, but I reviewed it, you know, but we didn't have time to make the actual stock. So I said, okay, make a chicken noodle soup, but when you fabricate the chicken, put drumsticks in there with the bone to add some flavor, and then take the bone out and take the meat off and put it back into the soup and add your noodles, you know. So we're doing like a kind of not 8-hour soups, but things you can do in an hour to 2 hours, you know. But they did a really good job. So we did a pumpkin soup, a butternut squash, we made potato leek, we made baked potato soup, the chicken noodle, like I said, and they got more and more into it, you know, every day. So I feel like, okay, like, we're starting to gel, right? The first week, they were a little quiet. It was a little hard to get information out of them. But now, okay, they're getting more used to me. And I'm also having to discipline more because they are younger students, you know, so there's that. Sometimes I get a little upset, you know, but we also made fresh focaccia. And we didn't have a mixer. I didn't let them use a mixer. There's only one, and I want them to do their individual. So they needed their own bread, which they hadn't done before, you know. So I feel like I'm doing the best I can, and I'm giving them a good class. I care about what they're learning. I want them to be good. I want them to be prepared when they work in the kitchen, because they're messy, they're not fast enough. They don't have technique. I have to see that they need to better themselves and to notice the details, because that's the problem. Everybody wants to be the fast chef. You need technique for that. You need to know what to look for. And at this point, they don't, you know, so I'm there to help them with that. It's fun, but it's also a lot of work, especially when there's no lesson plan. I met with another chef at the school because she introduced herself and she said, if you need any help. And I said, I just need you to look at my lesson plan and to tell me what I need to add or take away. So we did look at it. And guess what? The school does have a vague lesson plan. There is a lesson plan because there's room for you to add what needs to be added. But there is a guide. And the executive chef didn't give this to me. So I was totally shocked when she gave that to me. So this same executive chef, right, who didn't prepare me, he came into my class one day. He had a meeting late and he walked into my class. And then I said I had a couple questions for him. So we walked outside and then he interrupted me and he said, "Where is your uniform?" Because I was wearing my own jacket, my own chef coat. And I said, "Well, it's still being embroidered." Like, hello, you told me this like 3 days before class was starting. Of course I don't have it, you know? It's like, how can you be this annoying about uniform if you don't even tell me beforehand, right? So anyway, he wants me also to make breakfast stuff for his class, right? He teaches a breakfast class for the cafeteria, but he doesn't want his students to make this stuff because then they're on the line. So the students just stand around and my class has to prep for his class in the morning. So we make English muffins. We cut the potatoes for the breakfast potatoes. We make the huevos rancheros sauce. We par cook the bacon for the breakfast, like all these things. And then he wanted me to make crepe. And I'm like, what is going on? You know, and I said to him, I don't have time for that today because I have to make an actual class. Like, I have to follow the curriculum. Is it great? No. It's not great. The paycheck is great, but I just got thrown into it, and it's like this other kind of crazy whirlwind. Is there a perfect job? Probably not, right? Because in every job, there's other people, and you don't gel with every person you work with, but there should be a structure. There should be something I can work with. So that was frustrating, you know, and it's kind of messed up because I'm learning as I go. But that, I think, makes me look bad. And it makes the school look bad, you know, because these students, they see it, right? And also, maybe I'm talking about it in class, so that doesn't help. but I'm not a person that does not talk about things. You know, I'm very open and I'm honest. And when I'm frustrated, you can tell. And when I'm angry, you can tell. I don't hide my emotions well. And I'm glad about that, right? Because I don't want to be one of those people where everything bubbles under the surface. Like, that is not healthy for me. So that's been going on next to the cafe in the mornings. And then I did meet somebody on the metro. Apparently, I can only meet people on public transportation. You know, I'm not saying this is anything serious. It's not. But the metro in the mornings can be kind of sketchy. There are quite a few homeless. There are a lot of people with mental disorders. They're very unpredictable, and their reactions are sometimes scary. Okay? And this is at 5 a.m. So I met this gentleman, and he works for the metro. Anyway, he started talking to me, and I see him every morning, and we talk. And it's really nice, and it's good because I feel safe when I'm taking the metro because of him. You know, so that's an upside. And also, when I leave, when I reach my station, he continues 3 more stops, and then he gives me a hug. And I'm like, oh, that's really nice. That's nice to get a nice hug. You know, I haven't been hugged in a really long time. Didn't somebody say you have to be hugged like 20 times a day or something to feel normal? Well, that says a lot, because I haven't been hugged in, I don't know, like 6 months or something. So I need these hugs. I'm hug deprived. Anyway, I've just been working a lot. The good news is I can pay my bills. The bad news is it's hard for me to find time to record and to just really think about, oh, what's been happening, you know, because I'm working all the time and a lot has happened, right? I came back from Italy and then just dive right into work. I did start making bread again, not these last 2 weeks, but the sourdough. And that's so rewarding. I think making your own bread is the most basic thing you can do, but also it's the most fun at the same time. Oh, this is what I need to talk about. Okay, something happened, right? I was about to get up at 4:30. Let me tell you my drama, because this is drama, okay? I was asleep, and at night I have the window open because, like, this area is very warm during the day, and it keeps the heat in the apartment. So at night, I open my bedroom window. My bedroom window is right behind my backyard. I have a small backyard, and it's surrounded by bushes. So I'm not on the ground level. Underneath me are parked cars, right? So there's like a garage. So because of the garage, I'm on like the second level, right? I'm raised. And so is my backyard. My backyard is not on the ground level. So there's a dumpster on the other side of me by the backyard. So I'm asleep. It's like 4 a.m. And I get woken up. My window's open. And I hear whispering. Like a man and a woman, very clear, male and female. And I wake up and I hear rustling of bushes, right? And I hear the noise of somebody stepping on the dumpster and going into bushes, like very, very clear. I'm not making this up. I say that because my heart was racing. My heart was racing so fast. It was right there. I get up out of bed, I go to the window, and I'm hearing more voices. And I'm like, where is this? Like, it's because I couldn't see them because the bushes, you know, like they're on the other side of these bushes. I only see my backyard, the bushes in my backyard, but I'm hearing everything. And it's 4 a.m., so it's very, very quiet, right? Like early morning hours, there's no cars, there's no buses, it's just very quiet. Everything pieces together. And it's people trying to get into my backyard. So I'm like, oh my God, like, I don't want to turn on the lights. You know, I'm thinking, what do I do? And I call 911. I call the police, you know, and they're like, what is going on? And I say, you know, what I just told you. So they're like, okay, we'll send someone over. Of course, they don't arrive until 20 minutes later, right? So whatever happened, whatever this man and woman was trying to do, it didn't happen. You know, not because the police came. The police came later, but they were maybe there 5 more minutes. And I think they were struggling to like squeeze themselves in or over the fence or something. Again, I couldn't see. I just heard sounds. And then they left. And then the police arrive and I show them, you know, I take them out to the backyard. I show them. And then they're like, this area is known for raccoons. Are you sure you did not hear raccoons? I say, no, they're not raccoons. They were speaking English. It was a man and a woman. They say, if it happens again, to call. He said, but this area is very safe. Like, just trying to make me feel like I don't know what I heard. I thought that was pretty messed up. You know, so I'm a mess, right? I have to leave for work. I'm already, like, almost late. It messed me up for the whole day. I was super tired because I didn't sleep well. I had to teach that night, you know, and now I'm worried. I'm worried, what if they come back? Is this normal to be hearing rustling in the bushes? I know there are squirrels. Like, I know there's certain animals in the bushes, right? So now every time I hear an animal or the rustling of the bushes, I'm like, is that people trying to get in? The police didn't do anything. Basically, they just want when it happens again, right? And then usually when it's too late, that's when they show up. I told the landlord, he sent over the handyman who didn't do anything. He took pictures and sent it back to the landlord. So I told my ex. I messaged my ex saying, can I call you? Because he's in construction. Even though he lives in San Diego, I called him and I said, this happened, you know, and I was afraid. Like, I was scared. It happened. I told him the next day it happened. He said, well, I want to help. You know, what can I do? And I said, well, you can come here and put something over the fence so that nobody could come in. Because there's a neighbor's backyard too, and they could squeeze into the neighbor's backyard and from there into my yard. You know, so I got a camera in the backyard. I got motion sensitive lights in the yard. I'm trying here, okay? So I said, you can help me this way. And then he's like, I just don't have time, you know? And I said, okay, maybe it's a lot to ask. Like, it's not your responsibility, I get it. And maybe I can just figure it out myself, you know? So then he responded saying, no, it's not too much. If you need my help, I can help. And I'm like, yes, I need your help. I need your help. Fix the fence. Again, I'm a direct person. I said it right off the bat, okay? But I wasn't getting this like, oh yes, let me help you right away. You know, because he's probably seeing somebody else. He's probably living his life. He doesn't want his ex, right? He doesn't want to come to my house and fix something for me when men are with people in their lives that have value, right? Like, you're with that person because you value something that they do, that they have. You have a family with them or kids or whatever, right? Every relationship has a value. When you leave that relationship, you left it because maybe you didn't see the value. Maybe there was no value with this person, or who knows. But at this point, I probably don't have a value in his life, right? He's moved on. He's seeing whoever. And I'm just the ex now. And now I call him with this issue. Maybe he cares about me a little bit, right? Otherwise, he wouldn't have talked to me. But at the same time, he's not going to drive all the way to LA, right? And deal with the traffic and whatnot. So he did, though, send somebody, a handyman, who's coming by today to fix the fence, which was very nice. You know, I'm very appreciative of that. So yeah, that was the latest. The people have not come back, but the day I called 911, a couple days later, there was Halloween, and there was a drunk man or just a man outside the complex, right? So I live in an apartment complex, and there's a main door, and it's locked. There was somebody trying to get in, like shaking the door, yelling, cursing, knocking, pounding, like really scary. And this was at 3 a.m. Nobody calls 911. Like, you'd think somebody else would maybe call 911, but I guess most people don't. I called 911. Like, and of course they arrived too late, right? 30 minutes later. Meanwhile, there's a police department three blocks down from my apartment. They're right there. And it took 30 minutes. Anyway, this person went away, but I was scared, especially after this other incident, you know? So these are the two things that have been happening. And that night I went out for Halloween. I went out with some friends because they said, let's go to Burbank. And Burbank is where some celebrities live. There's some beautiful homes. And I guess they do up their front yards, you know? So there's Rick Baker, he's a special effects artist. And he created like a zombie show. So he put on this whole like actor thing with the makeup and the characters. And then they passed out Snickers, you know, but they put on this whole like scary show. And it was so bizarre because basically you have the not so wealthy people. They come into the rich neighborhoods to see what the wealthy people do for Halloween. And it was packed. It was so packed. There was major traffic jams on these side streets because people are driving through these neighborhoods. Meanwhile, you've got like hundreds of people on the street. And I'm not over exaggerating, hundreds of people. Like one person in their front yard put like a circus mirror alley. It was like some creepy thing with clowns, mirrors in an alley. I mean, that sounds scary already. So there were hundreds of people. You couldn't even move, right? I had to leave the alley because it was so packed. And I didn't even realize this happened on Halloween. You know, so I get back home from that, and then I deal with that in the morning, you know, this man trying to get into the apartment complex. So that was the last time I called 911. You know, of course, I complained, and then the police said, okay, if it happens again, but they blamed it on Halloween night and everybody partying. So nothing's happened since then, you know, but I think living alone, right? I'm also more vulnerable, especially after what happened with the bushes, right? I know what I heard. Yeah, like that kind of stuff affects you, you know? So now I close the window because I don't want to hear, like I'm paranoid now. So when I hear stuff, I can't sleep after that, you know? So I close the window, I put on a noise machine. That's all I can do at this point. So the handyman's coming today to fix the fence. I'm like, okay, like, yes, I live in LA. Yes, this is a city. And it sucks that that happened because now I'm paranoid, right? At the same time, I still gotta figure it out. I still gotta live life and do my thing. I'm trying to figure it out. Last week, I went out with another friend and we went to see a candlelight show downtown. So it's where they have hundreds of these fake candles and they put them on stage. There was a string quartet, and it was 1 hour of playing Beatles songs with the string quartet. And it was amazing. You know, that's what I love about the city. There's so many cool things to do. At the same time, there's also sketchy things, like with any city, right? Like in New York, except in Aspen. That never happened in Aspen, because literally there, you've got skiing, and that's it, you know? So pros and cons, right? Pros and cons. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Chef KV. Until next time, I will keep logging what happens in my brain and report next time.